You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome into another episode of Hockey Royalty. Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. We're randomless for just one more week, so you're going to have to put up with Russell Morgan and I for, again, just one more week. But the good news is we have real Kings hockey to talk about. Three games, 1-1-1. There is so much to discuss. We've got players that are playing well. Obviously, Trevor Moore is having his breakout. That's happening, as we all, or at least one of us, did predict in our bold predictions. Here it comes. There's a lot more to talk about. Get in on the chat, like and subscribe. Let's go. I'm going to tell you right now, Russ, I'm going to play up this Trevor Moore thing for as long as I can. So keep scoring, kid, because...
I think Randon has the Brant Clark train down.
Yes.
You can hop aboard your Trevor Moore train.
And yes.
I've been on this Alex LeFerrier
drive
for quite a while too. So I like it. I like it.
Okay. Yeah. Because I think for a while, like, and you've really, you're there with me though. I think we're both like the Blake Lizotte guys. Yeah. Trevor Moore though has become, I'm in on Trevor Moore for sure. So yeah, that's fine. Maybe he's got the Clark. I'm not gonna steal a train. I'll have to find another vehicle.
Okay.
Somebody can help me out with that. But I'm in on Trevor Moore. I'm in. So
it only took 30 seconds before you mentioned Trevor Moore, but definitely warranted.
How we doing, Russ? How's things? Obviously, it's been crazy with hockey. So good for you with that Monday night game and the Chargers that I tried to pump up on the DraftKings last week. That didn't. What happened?
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up, but no, it's funny because I was thinking, like, I'm so glad we're doing this pod today or this show today than if we had done it like Monday or something like that. Because I mean, even after the Monday Night Football game, which is just, I don't even know why I'm surprised at this point watching the Chargers be just utter failures every game they play. But I mean, then also the Kings games is like the first two games maybe didn't go as planned, obviously, and then. But at least we had yesterday. At least we had that Jets game. So there's a little bit of joy in my inflection here today. So I'm happy.
You had a tweet, and I'm paraphrasing that every Chargers game ends the same way. Every single one of them. And I'll be honest. Like, I have no way to speak. The Giants stink, but I did chuckle because it does seem that when the Chargers lose, they lose. Like, they rip your heart out.
It's funny because I don't know if I've told you, but I'm in a fantasy football league that I've been in with years with a couple of buddies of mine, and what's so unique about this league that we're in, it's actually kind of cool, is each member, it's a 10-team league, and each one of us is a fan of a different team.
You did say
that. We have a Charger fan, we have a Patriots fan, Broncos fan, all these different fans, and then of course we have our lone Cowboys fan who's just been absolutely giving it to me the last couple of days, but I'm just happy hockey's back. That's all.
Yes.
I'm just happy hockey's here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Lieb is too. Hey guys, how you doing? Nav says it's past his bedtime. Let's go, boys. Nav, I'm right there with you, buddy. I feel you. Anthony Caruso, what's up, boys? Al Smith, howdy y'all. Let's get it, Kings fans, from Daniel Hall. Good glimpse into the season and into the future of this season, Noah. No, I agree. Mm-hmm. I think we'll touch on some of that stuff for sure today. Sting Gaston is fired up. Let's go, he says. Frank Easy made it on time. Atta baby. Okay, so Russ, why don't we get into some of the news quickly? This isn't anything new. Everybody knows. Victor Arvidsson, though, is on long-term IR since the last time we recorded. You know, we recorded before the first game. I think he was, I don't even know if we knew he was hurt yet or if he was questionable for that first game. But obviously the news has come out. He is indeed on long-term IR, back surgery. Certainly an opportunity for some players, an opportunity to have some cap space. Not in the way you wanted to go about it, but it is what it is. So Russ, kind of your thoughts when you heard the news of the McClellan broke it after the game, really, you heard that you were there, if I'm not mistaken. And then, you know, what are your thoughts on this as you go forward in the future? Well, start on this season. Thoughts on this going forward. We'll start there.
Yeah. It's almost kind of bittersweet when you think about it, right? I mean, the first game of the season was just so, I guess, the way to evaluate it's so difficult just because of the roster situation that they played. 19 players or 17 total skaters. Yep. Yeah. So, and that's why when you look at the Arvidsson situation, yeah, it's terrible. You never want to lose a player as good as Victor Arvidsson. It's like, it's known to some to be one of the best playmakers on the team. Former 30 goal scorer in the NHL who could have been a 30 goal scorer, still might. You never know when he comes back, but it's bittersweet to lose that player in the lineup. But with how well Alex Laferriere has played, you're kind of hoping for this breakout season from Arthur Kaliev. It gives them an opportunity to, hey, you give them maybe more minutes in the lineup, give them some more power play time. And then, like you mentioned, opens up a little cap space. And now we can finally have a full roster on the ice. So yeah, it's just, it's tough to lose the player, but it definitely helps out the other way. Terms of roster management,
and not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but you know it's you know he's a player that's been an important player since he's gotten to the Kings, but he has been somebody that's dealt with some injuries. He is, as we mentioned, on long term IR. He's on the wrong side of 30, and oh, he happens to be in the final year of his deal. Does this injury? Does it depend on the severity? I think there's been kind of questions around Victor Arvidsson as possibly being somebody that it depends. He's somebody in the past that was like, could he be dealt to open up cap space? Or, God, he's just been so damn good. How do you not try to sign him to an extension? And you just wonder, and I'm obviously nobody has an answer to this. You just wonder if or how this type of injury for somebody that's had a little bit of a history of injuries, if this plays into some of the decision-making for Rob Blake and the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of how this team looks in the future, obviously we're looking a little further down the line, but yeah. I would guess Rob Blake's watching the team, especially a player like Laferriere, and saying, hey, maybe we don't have to talk about or negotiate a contract extension with Arvidsson. Maybe we can push that down the line and open up a little bit more cap space in the near future or year after that, whatever. Especially maybe look at prioritizing the goaltending situation. Mm-hmm. So obviously, there's no goalie signed after this year, so they're definitely going to have to revisit that. So, yeah, it's definitely interesting in terms of how you want to evaluate what the future of Victor Arvidsson is with the LA Kings. But I think for right now, obviously, like I just mentioned, it kind of helps the roster situation when you have a player like Laferriere who's been able to step in and just seem really comfortable right off the get. You give Victor Arvidsson a little bit more time to kind of rest and heal up. And I mean, let's face it, like if this team doesn't make the playoffs, it's a huge disappointment, right? So if you can, and everybody more than likely expects this team to make the playoffs. So if you can have a healthy and 100% Victor Arvidsson, or if you get any of these players 100% going into the playoffs, that definitely helps. So I think they're fine for right now, and they'll be able to make up for the loss that's Arvidsson.
Yeah, hopefully this isn't something that you worry with a back that, you know, it starts off as long-term IR, maybe a month, maybe 2 months. And yeah. It's just one of those things that turns into like 4 months or the season. So I hope that that's not the case. I hope that whatever the future holds for him in LA, I hope he at least gets to finish this season strong. You've mentioned LeFerrier here a couple of times. Francese comes in, Let Laugh Cook, Chef Laffy come in from Sting Gaffney. There's a lot of praise. Richie Rich comes in. I really like Laffy. It's hard not to get excited about Alex LeFerrière, and he is one of the bright spots in the first three games. But you know, we'll jump into next, Russ. Again, not to go too crazy. They're old news in today's day. They've played three games, but let's talk about the first two games. The Kings, they lose them both. You know, high scoring affairs, you could say. Both would have hit the overs. You can say that at DraftKings. And the first one, they lose 5-2 to Colorado in the season opener. You mentioned they played with 17 skaters, and then they lose the shootout to the Carolina Hurricanes. So, kind of overarching these first two games, because they were, I guess you can say that they were similar in some ways, but thoughts, Russ, overall on the first two games. Let's, rather than dig into any individual players, how about from a team aspect? How do you think the team played in these first two games?
It's weird. I thought the team played pretty well in these first two games, and obviously you want to get at least a win every time you play, but the way, like I mentioned earlier, the way that first game was set up with Cali have suspended Victor Arvidsson, kind of getting hurt right before the season started, you only have 17 skaters on the ice, it definitely put a little bit of, I guess, a mix into the chemistry that the Kings were kind of had, that momentum that the Kings had at toward the end of the preseason, or they showed throughout the preseason. So, I mean, we saw it in the first game right away. I mean, the power play was 0-for-5, so that's maybe one thing you can look at, and maybe also point to not having a player like Jordan Spence to help out with that second power play unit. There was also other things that kind of went on throughout that first game. There was a couple, like there was one power play where Adrian Kempe was in the box, and it just seemed like they couldn't get anything going without Kempe on the ice. And obviously, like I mentioned with the second power play, you know, you had Matt Roy, who I'll praise Matt Roy more than anybody else, but let's face it, he's probably not the best quarterback on the power play. So yeah, that was a little mixed up. But the thing with the first game, I just look at it, the Colorado Big Dogs, they just showed up. That's what it was. Cale Makar looked great. Mikko Rantanen, he looks like he's on fire to score 60 this year. Guy's on another level. And McKinnon, and it's weird. Like, you look at the Avalanche roster, and it's like, man, they look really good. I mean, you add pieces. Like, I'm not the biggest Ryan Johansson guy, but then you add a piece like a Thomas Tatar, who's seemed always, like, just flies under the radar wherever he goes, but then somehow puts up, like, 25 goals and 30 assists, and then is signed to a one-year contract for, like, $3 million somewhere else. It's weird with that player. I never really understood that. But you have those kind of players in the lineup and a fully healthy Avalanche team that they haven't really seen much last season. I mean, they look like a legit Stanley Cup contender. So that was that with that first game. And the second game, it was just tough goaltending from Copley. I mean, hold the Carolina Hurricanes to under 20 shots, something that didn't happen with them all year last year. You should probably win that game. And yeah, it's hats off to the team coming back down 3-0, but you were just felt a little disappointed because they weren't able to figure it out in the shootout. Round 9, it was just a little bit of a disappointment there. But hey, you come out with a point, especially being down 3-0. And you know what's funny is, like, I thought about, like, it kind of felt like, obviously it's earlier in the season than it happened last year, but it kind of felt like a little bit like the sequel to that Kraken Kings game from last year, where it was like 9-8, you lose in the shootout, but you come out of it still a little disappointed because of the goaltending situation. It kind of had that feeling that it was like a sequel. Maybe some people say sequels aren't as good as the original, so maybe that's what it was. But yeah, I guess that's my evaluation of the first two. How about you?
The first two games, Russ, it reminds me a lot of last year when, and I think I wrote a piece about it. It might have been after the Calgary game last year, where it's just chaos at times.
Oh yeah, where remember we did the Twitter. You joined me in the Twitter space after that game, yeah.
And it just was like, because yeah, to your point, like the first two games, the Kings had really good possession numbers. Colorado had the edge in expected goals, but the Kings, better possession numbers, better scoring chances, high danger chances. Same thing for Carolina. In fact, the Kings dominated in Corsi expected goal scoring chances. And I think in McClellan has talked about this a little bit, but going back to last year, it was so many like individual mental mistakes. And doing that piece last year where it's like, you've got everybody back. It's just there's this individual decision-making that just is crumbling and it's just falling apart. And one of the things we talked about last year was you had some new players that you were getting into the lineup. And here you look again at this season, you've got in that first game, Bjornfoot, you've got Englund, and then you're going to add in Jordan Spence. You've got Pierre Dubois, you know, Laferriere is getting now, you know, some regular time. So you've got some players that are, you know, not as integrated into the system in an NHL regular season game. And that's not to say that those are the guys, by the way, that were making errors. It's just collectively as a group, early days, honestly kind of expect this. I kind of expect stuff like this where it's a little bit more sloppy. It's going to take, you know, maybe even a full month for things, and not even just the Kings, by the way, this goes for a lot of teams to kind of start to settle in a little bit to their structure, to the way they want to play. So I'm not totally shocked at that. I was actually encouraged that you played a Colorado team with 17 skaters and played pretty well 5-on-5. Like you said, the Stars were the Stars. You know, and to think, like it was there was a play. It was the third goal. You want Talbot to have the first McKinnon goal, right?
Yeah.
But you look at the McKinnon goal, like everybody, the first goal of the game for Colorado, everybody is back kind of in the place. It's just they lose a guy for a split second and it's in the net. The Rantanen goal was bad. The third goal, the Rantanen goal that was a tip, I think was the third goal, maybe the fourth. Now I'm getting confused, but what happens there is that was an icing, but McKinnon, and I'm not going to blame Gavrikov for this. Gavrikov had maybe 5 to 10 steps, maybe not quite that many, but maybe a handful of steps on McKinnon. McKinnon beats him, wins the icing race. And then there's a battle in front, and it was Gavrikov is with Rantanen, and Rantanen gets a stick on it. It's like one of those things where if we're able to get the icing on that, that whole thing doesn't happen. That goal doesn't happen. So there's just some little things that just popped up that, you know, overall, I don't think it was anything that I expect to be like a lingering problem. These are mistakes that will get fixed. These are, in my opinion, are not like systematic issues or systematic breakdowns or anything like that. I think you played two good teams that if you do have some individual mistakes, they are going to make you pay. And, you know, I think the elephant in the room here that we haven't really talked about yet, but we can now with the second game, really the first game too, but the second game with the errors was just so glaring. Kevin Fiala did not have a good first two games in Los Angeles. And it really showed in the second game. You know, the giveaways in the neutral zone on the power play zone entries, like that's just something he excels at, right? And you don't want to take that away from him. You don't want to take that creativity away from him. I think the first one, it just slipped off. It was a total, looked like it just bounced off of his stick, basically. So, all of that to say, Russ, I don't think the first two games were bad. I agree with you. The results, I think it's good to get a point in that Carolina game. But all in all, I took some positives out of it, I guess you could say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that first game, you think about it, with everything that seemed to be going wrong down 3-0, right off the bat to the Avalanche, you had a power play in the third period down by one.
Yeah.
And you had a chance to tie it right there. And like we mentioned, like power play just didn't come through. It was 0-for-5 against the Avalanche. That game kind of reminded me of one of the games against the Oilers 2 years ago in the playoffs when, I don't know, maybe it was Game 6 or maybe it was Game 6 where they just had – it seemed like the Oilers would just keep coming and coming, but the Kings were in it, and they had a chance to kind of tie it or even win it at the end. They just couldn't come through. It kind of had that same feeling. But like you mentioned, like that first game, I just read it off almost because of the roster and how they went into it. And I also kind of wonder if maybe there's like a little – preseason fatigue kind of setting in when you have this like really unique situation with training camp Australia, obviously, and then you had this long-winded preseason that it got to a point where even McClellan was saying we just need to play. It's getting to a point where these guys are just out here just making the rounds, and it hurts a player like Kevin Fiala, who just especially in preseason, is probably just out there doing whatever he wants to do. And yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. You never want to take away those type of Kevin Fiala moments, because that's what makes him such a good player. Like, you live and die by Kevin Fiala. That's what it is, unfortunately. And he'll have those moments where he's taking the puck up ice and has like a flub on the stick, and there's all of a sudden there's a Sebastian Aho breakaway the other way. Unfortunately, that's just what you live with Kevin Fiala, and you get the three assists to go on top of it. So
yeah,
I mean, that's the thing. So I mean, maybe you were looking for a little bit better goaltending from Copley, but either way, they came out with a point, and the first two games they were what they were.
The one for Copley for me though was the third goal. The Kings, it was the third. Like, they're down 2-0, but they started to turn the tide a bit. They strung a few good shifts together. Right. It's like, okay, so now that they're getting back into this here, they're settling in, and he gives up the third one, which was really bad, you know, and that's tough. And to the Kings' credit, that's a type of goal that's like a backbreaker almost. It's like, we're down 2-0. It's okay. We're grinding.
You saw those last year all the time.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Well, you did in the early part of the season. So, all that to say, though, they get a point out of the first two games. Not great games, but I don't think they were as bad as maybe people, at least. The reaction was certainly pretty negative, but I don't think they were that bad.
Two of the best teams in the league. I mean, contenders. And you played them both pretty well. So came up with a point with the first two, with all the situations going on in the background. I think you live with it.
Get to last night's game on Tuesday against Winnipeg. So
fun stuff.
Yes. Yeah. We'll skim over those first two games. Now let's get to the good stuff. You know what? Hang on. Before we do talk about that, the Winnipeg game, I do want to touch quickly, and I guess we'll do it a little bit more later too, but I especially the first game, Quinton Byfield. Todd McClellan said that was arguably the best game he's played as an LA King. We'll touch on some individual players a little bit later too, but real quick on that, Quinton Byfield to start the season with that good of a game, gets a goal, you know, really good to see, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of reminded me of, I think it was 2 years ago when he played one of his first games, or if not the first game against the Colorado Avalanche. He just looked like a man possessed on the ice. And yeah, that's kind of what you saw against the Avalanche to open this season. So, I mean, if you can get more performances like that from Byfield, obviously maybe got a little lucky with that goal he scored. But yeah, that's exactly what we're looking for, is that type of Quinton Byfield. Just be engaged.
Yes.
Throughout the play. You don't have to be producing all the time as much as we'd like to see. But if you're engaged in the play constantly on every shift, those points will come. And we've seen it happen the first three games with them. So it's been great to see.
To Tuesday, the Kings were not engaged the first half of that first period. That's for sure. They were really second best for a lot of that first period. And if it wasn't for the play of Cam Talbot, this game could have gotten out of hand early. But boy, did the Kings really turn things around in the second period. They completely dominated the Winnipeg Jets, out attempting them 20-5 at 5-on-5, out shooting them 12-3, holding an 8-1 high danger chances, or scoring chances were 12-3, excuse me. High danger chances were 8-1 in that second period of 5-on-5. Really controlled. They take the 2-0 lead. Eventually extending the lead and winning 5-1 in the third period. So Russ, what'd you think of the start of the game and any concerns to you? Cause again, it wasn't the first time this season that we've seen a little bit of a slow start from the Kings. As you mentioned, they were down 3-0 in each of the first two games. So slow start.
Yeah. Another slow start. It's a little disappointing, but I mean, If Cam Talbot's going to stand on his head like that in every game, then this guy's the limit for this team. So I guess maybe they're testing him, Talbot, a bit. But if the fact that the Kings were able to make it through that first period 0-0, I took it as a total win. Maybe the team kind of noticed it too, in terms of, hey, Talbot's kind of keeping us in this game. Like, they must know, it's like, hey, we got to figure something out. And so, yeah, the first period was a little bit disappointing, but I'm glad they were able to turn around the second.
Yeah, and it started in the second with none other than P.L. Dubois gets the scoring start.
Well, see, I was going to say, so you know what really – it was weird because I'm watching the second period, and he scored with, like, it was like 8 minutes into the second, so it was kind of the midway through the second period. But you just kind of felt like they were just like needing like some kind of spark. Like the way that the game had been flowing, I was just watching it thinking like, if the Kings just, if they just happen to score or get the first goal, it certainly feels like a waterfall would happen, especially with, for the Jets. Like, you feel so terrible for their fans. I mean, Gabe Vilardi goes down. We hope nothing but the best. It sounds like an MCL sprain. He's out, I believe the report was 4 to 6 weeks. So when you watched it, it looked like it could have been a lot worse. So I guess that seems like a the best situation that he could be in, given the what it looked like on the ice. Because I was thinking the worst when I saw it. That didn't look great at all. But, I mean, you think for the fans, like, the energy had kind of just been drained out of the building almost just when they saw that. Because they start Iafallo, Vilardi, and Kupari all on the same line to start. Yeah. And what the funny part is, like,
I like it,
they gave up a scoring chance to Kempe like 10 seconds of the game. I was thinking, like, man, you're really going to start those three? Like, I would never have done that. And sure enough, Kempe gets a scoring chance.
I would have done it. I would have done it in Los Angeles.
No, I love it. I love it from a hockey, like, from like a kind of like emotional perspective. It is great. Hockey perspective, probably not the best situation. Kempe gets the scoring chance and delay a game on Sandberg. But yeah, but in the second period, the spark was really, it was Carl Grundstrom, because he's the one who drew that tripping penalty that kind of eventually led to PLD's goal. So, I mean, Carl Grundstrom, you just kind of have to tip your cap to the way he's been able to play. Because if you kind of look up and through the lineup, maybe you can pick out a few players that are kind of, I don't want to say not providing as much as you want to see, but I mean, Carl Grundstrom, you're just not wanting more. He's leaving it all on the ice every shift. And sure enough, he's the one who eventually draws that tripping penalty that leads to that first goal for the Kings.
Well, and what was interesting is, so the Dubois goal came seconds after the penalty expired. Yeah. That unit spent the entire 2 minutes, if I recall, in the zone. Yeah,
that's right.
The puck movement was good. Like, it was still Dubois and Kopitar on the ice. Like, they were moving it, but they really didn't get anything. And I'm really curious to see how this goes. They did not get anything of really dangerous chances in terms of the power play against Winnipeg, even when they had that zone time. They had how many opportunities? They had 5 opportunities, but they were 1 for 5, I think it was, against Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. And really only one of those chances that they had was graded as a scoring chance, which when you have that many opportunities, something's got to give. And we talked about this a bit with the power play in the preview of the season, where that righty down low, I just wonder how much they get. Vilardi was so good, and it looked like Arvidsson was going to click there as that righty down low with all the lefties that they have. And Dubois going down there is fine because he's great down there, but he's a lefty, and so is Fiala, and so is Kopitar, and so is Kempe. So I do think it creates a little bit of a, you know, just from a clean and one touch passing and getting plays to the bumper, you know, I do think that makes it a little bit more challenging. So I'm just interested to see where this goes and what they decide to do there.
Well, especially because I'm like watching these power plays, especially that first unit. You think like Adrian Kempe is more than likely the number one option on the power play right now. His one-timer, his shot has become lethal.
Yep.
That's not a secret to the league anymore. We're not sneaking up on teams with Adrian Kempe's one-timer anymore. This is a known thing that he's a 40-goal scorer, and a lot of them have come from that dot. And now I'm looking, like, paying attention to see if teams are starting to take that away from the Kings. Like, who's going to be that second option, especially when you don't have a player like Victor Arvidsson on the other side, who's been known to be a shooter, who has showed a lot of good playmaking capabilities. So that'll be something to watch with that first unit, is what happens when Adrian Kempe isn't available for that one-time shot or that wrist shot, that lethal wrist shot he's got. So that's something I'll be paying attention to. But that first goal, I mean, yeah, it didn't come on the power play, but man, like the movement they had, it was good to see. You maybe were hoping for a little bit better chances, but I mean, just, we'll go back to the player that we're kind of talking about to start here, is Kevin Fiala. He was like heavily involved in every loose puck. If you go back and watch that entire sequence, every loose puck that was coming his way, he was winning. And they weren't just like kind of finesse plays. They were hard against the wall, winning puck battles, physical battles, which is what you love to see, especially for a player who's coming off a game against that he had against Carolina Hurricanes. So to see that from Kevin Fiala, that was really good to see. And then obviously the PL goal that happened right after that.
He was much better, Fiala, and he wasn't peak Kevin Fiala, I would say, but he was definitely better in this game than he was the first two. And yet, to your thing about the power play, if teams are going to take that away, well, now that's where the bumper becomes that much more, in my opinion, much more of an important piece. And can you effectively get it there? That play from Fiala, who's on the left flank, down low to a lefty in Dubois, who spends more time net front than maybe like a Victor Arvidsson or Gabe Vilardi did. And again, think about the stick placement. You know, if you're a righty and you're Arvidsson or you're Gabe Vilardi when they used it last year, if Fiala's got the puck on the left flank, you can be as that righty kind of like at the crease, but your stick can still be out here. You can still have an option to pass. As a lefty, it's not there with Dubois. And with Kempe on that right circle, he's not going to be much of the distributor and the playmaker. If it comes to him, he's wiring it. So that's where I think it's going to be interesting. And I sense that maybe could be where the logjam comes is if that's a lefty down there, it's just a tougher play. Not an impossible play, but it is a tougher play. It changes things a little bit. So we'll see. We'll see.
I mean, what I loved about PL on that goal was – what he did with the puck as soon as he got it. He just drove straight to the net.
He's a horse. Yeah.
Hey, I'm a 6'4", 220-pound guy. That's exactly what you want to see. That's kind of what the Kings have been missing these last few years, right? Someone who's just willing to just, hey, I got the puck on my stick. I'm going to train wreck all the way to the crease, and if anyone's going to stop me, then try it. But sure enough, I mean, we saw them try to have it. He put the puck on net. It bounced over to Kopitar and right back to PL's stick. So
I love that goal. You said it shortly after the trade. He's a bull in a china shop. Like he is a guy that is not afraid to go to the dirty areas to make plays. They go up 2-0. The Kings do on a goal from none other than Trevor Moore. That's becoming a theme here in the first few games as he's on pace for 82.
The countdown has started. That 20. Countdown to 30 is happening. What?
It is happening. So that was big. And so they get out of the period 2-0, the second period, and it honestly, like, total control. Yeah. Total control. And the third period, like, even so Kaliev scores early in the third period to put the Kings up 3-0. And that really iced it because the Kings then, you know, Winnipeg got a little bit of a push, but when you're up 3-0, the Kings they're never going to be a team that's going to push when they're up multiple goals. So there's a little bit of pressure coming back the other way, but nothing crazy. And then they score later on the Dano power play goal. So it was just a controlled third period, I would say. Like it was a really, really good final 40 minutes from the Kings, maybe 45 even. Because I didn't think the end of the first period was as bad as the start. But the goal scorer of the third goal, Arthur Kaliev, draws back into the lineup after his suspension. I had tweeted out before the game, like, I'm really interested to see how this fit goes with Dano and Moore, because they're used to having a guy with a motor. Victor Arvidsson can go. He's a puck hound out there. You know, and Carl Grundstrom, when he's on that line, obviously he's the same way. Just don't see Arthur Kaliev as that player. He's clearly pure shooter, sniper. Like, he's got that talent to him. In my opinion, that was like, I tweeted this during the game, like the hard, quote unquote, hardworking. Like, he, to my eyes, looked like he was working a lot harder than I'm used to seeing Arthur Kaliev work. Like, he rolled his sleeves up and went to work with Dano and Moore. And you know, he earned himself, I think he got a couple points in that game. So I don't know your thoughts on Arthur Kaliev, your thoughts on that line, how you think he fits. I presume we'll see the same thing in Minnesota.
Yeah, that's Arthur Kaliev playing with Dano and Moore is where I wanted him this entire time. I mean, you think about it. When he was playing with Kaliev, or when he was playing with Fiala and Dubois, it just didn't really make a lot of sense to me, because the thing with Fiala, obviously not known as this puck retrieval guy, not going to do much in terms of winning pucks in corners and all that stuff. He will, but he's not known for it. And PL Dubois, he's going to be playing the center position, so he's going to be tracking behind a little bit more. And you want him to be kind of that, I guess, net front presence kind of power forward guy. So with Kaliev there, it seems like they're missing that Alex Iafallo puck retrieval, Trevor Moore type player on that line. I mean, now that you kind of switch them, you have Alex LaFerriere, who's, hey, I'm the young guy who's willing to do whatever it takes to help the team win. Perfect. Play him with the flashy guy and the new guy who's trying to make his name known here in L.A. That makes all the sense in the world, and we kind of saw a little glimpse of that these first few games. And then now with Kaliev, yeah, he doesn't really have the motor. He doesn't really have the puck retrieval skills like you mentioned with Victor Arvidsson. But, I mean, that's what Trevor Moore and Philip Deneau already have.
Yeah,
you don't really need another player who's kind of similar. And that's always why those three click so well, is because they're almost the same kind of player. And they also have a little bit of skill mixed with it too. So you always see those nice passing plays between the nice line. But now with Kaliev, I mean, that Kaliev goal was a clinic and pure representation of what these three can bring. You have Trevor Moore and Philip Deneau who are going to go and do all the dirty work, and they're going to find Arthur Kaliev. Yeah, it's maybe a little bit easier goal, which is kind of a tap in right in front of Hellebuck. But hey, if those two are going to hound and retrieve pucks and be the aggressive guys along the boards and the forecheck, then, and if they're able to find an Arthur Kaliev and let him unleash that shot he has, I think the sky's the limit for this line, because they've shown it before. This line 2 years ago led the team in expected goal share in among all lines on this team. So this isn't something that they're just getting used to. They've been in this position before. So I'm looking forward to see what they do for the rest of the, or at least for the time being, until we see Arvidsson come back and maybe they stick with it.
I agree with Arby here. He says your point makes a lot of sense, Russ. And yeah, listen, and there was another comment I had, Holden, that said Kaliev looked way better with Deneau and Moore than he did with Fiala.
Yeah. And the preseason, everybody saw it. They were kind of like,
Yep.
You had heard from McClellan, like, oh, Artie had put in all this work. He's not being moved. I mean, everyone's like, kind of like, all right, we're really liking what we're seeing out of Dubois and Fiala, this chemistry that's producing. But Kaliev just hasn't got his foot in the door yet. And all it took was one game with Deneau and Moore, and all of a sudden everyone's like, Arthur Kaliev looks great. And I'm included. Like, he does look great. We saw, like you mentioned, you saw a lot of those roll your sleeve up type of plays that McClellan had asked, or Rob Blake had asked the player to do, or Kaliev to do over the summer. And so if he's able to keep doing that and skate a lot harder, work a lot harder, some of the stuff that we hadn't seen these last few seasons, I mean, this could be a player that the Kings have on the wing here.
The question from Lieb, I think, is the question that everybody has, is kind of wonder if Kaliev can keep that energy up, but he looks so good, ride it as long as he can. And I think they're going to ride it because, you know, he's going to play. Like, even if Arvidsson was healthy, he was going to play somewhere. And I think it would have been probably LaFerriere that was the odd man out, because they need to find out what they've got with Kaliev. This is a huge year for him. And I'm not saying he's going to go score 30 goals, but he's got to show that he's capable of playing 5-on-5 and not just become somebody that is only useful on the power play. They need to see that more of this. So this was a great start. This is, you know, McClellan mentioned that Byfield had arguably his best game of the season, or as a King in the first game. Boy, I'd put this Kaliev game right up there with one of the better games he's played in the NHL. And coming off a suspension, I'm sure he had a lot to prove, and he had a little chip on his shoulder, and he showed it. And if he can keep doing this, boy, oh boy, that's a big get for the Kings to have somebody that can score like this in that middle six. That would make a big, big deal, especially with the loss to Arvidsson, right? This is somebody who can really replace some of that production. There's no doubt about it.
The thing with the Kaliev, kind of wondering about his energy. I mean, Moore and Deneau, they're not going to drag Kaliev around. He's going to have to keep up with them. So, I mean, those are the perfect complement of players to play with if you're worried about his energy.
I'm going to say that Trevor Moore's shot did not hit off of Moore's stick, because boy, oh boy, was that night. That was an absolute snipe. So I'm going to choose to believe that did not hit his stick. And it's because it's like he's I call him, I think I tweeted to you, it's like a pocket rocket. There's a missile coming out. He's not a big guy, but his release is something. And again, there's a reason why my bold prediction was that, like, part because of the shot. I never considered him to have like an elite shot, though, but just because of the amount of scoring chances he gets, and he's always around the puck, that if he can stay healthy, but boy, what a shot that was. And that really put the game away. And it was good to see Philippe Deneau get one on the power play there late in the game. Like, something that, you know, he seems to, I don't know if it's fair to say it's a slow start for Deneau, but, you know, he had a little bit of a down year last year from the prior, so just good to see him get on the board there on the power play.
There's a lot of line mates changes going on between Deneau. He's never really found consistent line mates. Maybe he's played a little bit more with Trevor Moore than someone else, but yeah, it seems like it's always been like whether it's Arvidsson or Grundstrom. But when that nice line was clicking, that's when Philip Deneau was getting all of his point production. But with Arvidsson out, Grundstrom kind of slid in there. He looked pretty good. And now you have Kaliev in there. Yeah, I agree with you. It seems like Philip Deneau just kind of always just flies under the radar, but still somehow is able to produce. And he's got 4 points in the first three games. So he's looking pretty good so far.
I'll say this. One of the things about Trevor Moore, where I was like, you know what, it's going to be real tough to get 30 if he's not getting power play time. He's getting some power play time though, so at least has a shot. Speaking of the power play, Chris comes in with a question. Last season, Kempe was deadly on the one timer on the PP. Is Arvidsson's absence the reason why the PP doesn't resolve around Kempe's one timer anymore? So we touched on this just a little bit ago, Russ, and you had mentioned, and I think this question kind of ties in what both you and I were saying. You're saying, listen, Kempe is not a surprise anymore. Teams are going to be aware that that's where the Kings want to go with the puck. They want to set up Kempe's one-timer. I have talked about Arvidsson being down low, and that in part Arvidsson, but also in part a righty, because last year it was Velarde, and it was so effective because they could one-touch passes from Velarde to Fiala. He could go one touch to the bumper. We saw Velarde make passes to Kempe. He could go Fiala, Velarde, Fiala, Kempe, crossing to Kempe if it was that quickly. A little bit tougher to do with the righty. So this is a good question, Chris. And really, I think that Russ and I are both at the stage of like, let's just see how this plays out. Right now, it's Dubois down low. And if you think about it, they don't have a righty that they probably feel good about. The only other righty offhand is Laferriere.
I mean, I could think of one.
But like, I don't know that they're going to put him down low on that. You know, he's not that playmaking player, I would say, at least at the moment. So I don't blame him for putting Dubois there. I just wonder if it does change where the kind of strike points come for the Kings. Mm-hmm. Another thing to talk about, of course, in the Jets game, we talked about his performance in the first period, Cam Talbot, but overall, like, this was a huge, and I mean, Russ, huge game, because I guess we can transition this a little bit into the goaltending conversation. It seems to be like a decent transition that we can go there, because
is that a big topic in LA, goaltending? I haven't heard.
Evidently. This was a huge game because the first two games, listen, I don't pin them on the goalies, but there was one bad goal from Talbot. There was probably two bad goals from Copley. And then, like, even if they're not to blame, you kind of like, you hope he can come up with one of the other ones. This game was I think, something that was needed to really calm the nerves a little bit. He ends up making 28 saves, Six. 27 saves, 27
26,
saves.
27, right there.
14 in the first period, but nonetheless was rock solid throughout the game, made some big saves. I know he was frustrated that he didn't get the shutout. And as he said after the game, it wasn't because of the shutout. He wanted to have PL Dubois as the game-winning goal. But let's forget this first game for a second. Your evaluation or this third game for a second, because we'll say Talbot played excellent. I guess, what is your evaluation? What was your evaluation of the goaltending after the first two games? How were you in panic mode after the first two games?
Wasn't really in panic mode, but it certainly was putting hashtag goalies to the test, wasn't it? I was definitely, I mean, the number of question marks and everything I was getting on Twitter, it was just like, yeah, like that was the number one topic. And I mean, I don't blame him. He's Copley, like we just talked about, didn't maybe perform as well as you'd hoped. The second game, first game, maybe same thing with Cam Talbot. There were a couple goals, but I think a little bit more lean to how the Avalanche played. But, I mean, to have him come out and play as well as he did in that third game, I'm just thankful that hopefully that puts some of the Dan Vladar talk to rest.
Oh, dear God.
I swear to God, if someone sends me another article on Dan Vladar, I'm going to lose my mind. It just makes no sense why the Kings would, or any team would, trade for a guy who has a sub 900 career save percentage, who is signed for one more year at $2.2 million, which is pretty much the same cost as both the Kings goaltenders combined. But anyway, I digress. So just to focus more on Cam Talbot, it's just, it gives you a little bit more confidence that, hey, okay, Cam Talbot still, looks like he's still got it. And you're not asking him to play 65, 70 games of the year. Just, hey, you can give us 50 to 55 quality starts. They don't have to all have to be like that. But, I mean, let's face it. The Winnipeg Jets, like, they look kind of bad, I want to say. I mean, when Gabe Vilardi went down, they
just looked, a big loss.
They look like they had nothing going on in terms of skill or anything like that. Kyle Connor's great. Nikolaj Ehlers, I think, is a great player. Scheifele, I don't know if he's worth the $8.5 million, but hey, he's a pretty good player too. But I mean, once Vlardy left, they just really had nothing. And so the talent that maybe was coming toward Talbot wasn't as great. But hey, not every team is going to be the Colorado Avalanche and the Carolina Hurricanes. There's going to be these games where they get to play the Winnipeg Jets, the San Jose Sharks. So if you can get those performances where the Kings, maybe their defense is maybe lacks a little bit, but you can still have that backstop in Talbot, I'm totally fine with it. Because last year, the Kings didn't give up less than two goals in a game till the 11th game of the season, where it was a 5-1 win against the St. Louis Blues. So this year, for this season to make it to the third game and only give up one goal, I'm happy. So good start for Talbot. Let's see if he can keep going. And I wonder if McClellan starts him against Minnesota.
I wonder the same. Real quick, for any Winnipeg Jets fans, just to be clear, this was a prompt to me for me to put the ticker down. It is at NHL Russell that he put you in the same sentence as the San Jose Sharks. It was not Randon. It was not myself. It was at NHL Russell who put the Winnipeg Jets in the same conversation.
Dude, I mean, can we, like, so they had, I mean, they only had 11,000 fans in the building.
That is sad.
That's tough. It's unfortunate because, I mean, I really don't know what their direction is. I feel like it kind of feels like they're having the same kind of season as the Avalanche, or not the Avalanche, the Flames had last year, where it was like, hey, we lost a big player, but let's try to make up for it and keep our fans happy by giving our big guys these big contracts, and let's see if we can keep the fans happy. And I think they're just trying too hard. I think they probably should have gone maybe a little bit further into the rebuild instead of giving Hellebuck $8.5 million. Because, man, that contract it's not going to look good if the team in front of them is not playing that well.
No. Shankmaster, late to the party. What's up, guys? Go Kings. Go. Welcome, Shankmaster. Always a pleasure to have you. Holden, I saved it. I saw this. I shouldn't say that. I didn't see it, so I haven't checked this, so you better be right, Talbot, because I'm putting it up here on the screen. Cam Talbot is fourth in the league in goals saved above expected, according to Money Puck. So he obviously heavily tilted to this Winnipeg game, but still, that's a start. Like, we're not
I
even
think Money Puck, their numbers were a little inflated for the Avalanche game right now. But
yeah, they were.
But hey, still looks good. I mean, like you said, that Winnipeg game kind of propped those numbers up a bit more, but he deserved it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, I think I see Jace comes in and says, I think he plays tomorrow. I think he plays tomorrow too. Like,
you think so?
I think so. Former Minnesota goalie coming off a great start.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
former team. You know, I hate to say that makes a big difference, but I think McClellan is looking for a sign. Not ace of base. He's just looking for something. Like, he's looking for something to again, it's not as if he's going to start Talbot for the next 10 games, if he played well. But I think this is an opportunity to say, we had a good start. We're going to roll it back. We're going to run it right back with him. Now, maybe, you know, he's an older guy. He's had some injuries. Maybe this quick of a turnaround, if there was like 2 days in between. So maybe that plays into it. But my guess is he's going to play. My guess
when you have – yeah, the thing to think about too, I mean, when you have the Bruins coming into town on Saturday, I wonder, like, my thought – like, I could go either way on this. Like, yeah, maybe you want to keep Talbot's momentum going. Like, he played really well. You want to give up a little bit of confidence to the fan base about the goaltending situation, also to the team. because I mean we saw it last year. Like the team just didn't look confident playing in front of whether it was Peterson or Quick, and then all of a sudden Copley comes in. He looks average, but the team's playing a lot better in front of him. So we were talking about it. Maybe there's something to that. But even this year, like yeah, Talbot looked great. Team played really well in front of him. Maybe there's something correlation to that. But I do wonder, like you mentioned, it's a long season. We're talking about the fourth game of the year. Older guy, you more than like maybe have to keep him ready for the playoffs. I don't want to think that far ahead, but hey, it is what it is. So I don't know. I could go either way, whether they give Copley or Talbot the start. I'm not going to be disappointed.
I would go Talbot, and I'd give, depending on how the game goes, I'd give Copley the Eastern Conference team against Boston on Saturday. Oh, okay. That's how I'd run it. But
give him the home. That makes a little bit more sense, too. You get to keep matchups the way you want, you would think.
We'll see how it shakes out. Leap comes in here. One more thing on the Winnipeg. Winnipeg fans, some of the best in the league when it's going well. Get goosebumps seeing the whiteout. Sucks to see when it's bad. Absolutely. We have no ill will toward the Winnipeg fans. That's for sure. And, you know, Russ, what else is some of the best in the league is DraftKings, particularly when it comes to sports books. The NFL season is going strong. DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking up new customers with an offer that's even stronger. Bet $5 on any game this week. Score $200 instantly in bonus bets. DraftKings is not stopping there. All customers can take advantage of a sweetener offer every game day this October. We talked about Russ. His Chargers didn't come through. The Giants obviously didn't. They're both underdogs this weekend. Chargers in Kansas City at +5.5 at DraftKings. The Kings are home dogs to the Washington football team Commanders. I'm not going to recommend a bet on any of those. That's just not going to happen. So, but if you wanted to follow along with the Hockey Royalty crew, at least the two of us here today, Giants +2.5 home against Washington, KC Chargers +5.5 at KC at DraftKings. Get in on the game day greatness. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code THPN. New customers can score $200 instantly in bonus bets when you bet $5 on the NFL. That's code THPN only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, licensee partner Golden Nugget Lake Charles, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See sportsbook.draftkings.com/football terms for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. There we go, Russ, DraftKings. Always.
Everybody happy. Loved your transition there.
See? Well, did that? I'll take it. Absolutely. Elite. Leave elite ad transition game. Yes, absolutely. Leave. You let Rand. Make sure you remind Random when he's back next week. Okay. All right. Let's. We'll shift into the kind of the back half of the show here, and kind of tidy it up with some hot starts. And I guess I could have put in here too, but I'm trying to stay positive. Russ, guys that were maybe off to some slow starts. Although I think we talked about Fiala a little bit, his slow start. We've talked about the goaltending. We'll talk about a couple guys too that maybe are off to some slower starts, but guys off the hot starts, I think the one that everybody wants to talk about right now is Alex Laferriere, right? You have been high on him dating back to the 2022 or 21. I don't even remember now which rookie camp, but you like him.
Dev camp. Yeah, I remember watching.
Yeah, like the second you saw him, it was like, this kid's going to be a player. So Russ, it's been three games. You know, we were in on him in preseason. Alex Laferriere, where are you at with him?
I'm not surprised, to be honest with you. He's come in here, and I love what McClellan said after the game. I think it was the first game where he said he looks like he's been in the league for years. And that's exactly the first thing I noticed when I watched him play. He just looks so comfortable. He's never hesitant. Like you saw that the first couple of times when Quentin Byfield came up and Arthur Callie. I mean, yeah, they're younger. I mean, Quinn Byfield's a year younger than LaFerriere, so that's something to think about too. Yeah. There's never been that hesitancy in LaFerriere's game, and it seems like that's been the case at every level. And sure enough, that first game, to get in that fight with O'Connor, I mean, that moment, to see his family all pumped, like, I just felt so pumped for the kid, like, talking to him after and the player. He's going to be so good. Like, I know he hasn't scored or even gotten a point in these first three games, but it just feels like he's been so involved in everything that's going on, everything that's been good about that line with Fiala and Dubois. He leads the team in 5-on-5 individual shots. So there's that. He's not afraid to shoot the puck, which was great. You want to see a kid who's going to come in and just not be afraid to shoot the puck. So that's good to see. And he's making the little plays happen too. I mean, there was a shift or a play he made in the last game against Winnipeg where I think he kind of chipped the puck past one of the defenders and then kind of put it right between his legs and got a shot on goal. It wasn't really the best scoring chance, but I mean, those are the type of plays that you see from Alex LaFerriere. He's able to take, he'll play physical. He plays that forecheck really well, and he's got a little finesse to his game. So everything that I kind of talked about, or we kind of saw at the beginning and throughout preseason, is also coming to fruition on the ice in the regular season games. And that's why when I talked about with Victor Arvidsson being out, it's kind of bittersweet, because sure, it hurts to lose a player like Arvidsson, but when you have this young stud and rookie that, I mean, Kings fans haven't really seen a young player like this just step in and make an immediate impact in quite some time. So to see that now with LaFerriere, I think it's been great. And I think I think he'll stick on that line with Dubois and Fiala for his time being until Arvidsson comes back, and then figure out something till then.
It was McClellan that said he would be pounding on somebody's desk to make sure that LaFerriere isn't going anywhere near Ontario, because he looked that good, and he's looked that good. All he's doing right now at 5-on-5, Russ, is leading the team in shot attempts. He's leading the team in overall shot contributions. He's third in shot assists. Clearly the duo, or he's fitting in just perfectly with that line. And boy, does it become even more scary if some of these pucks start to fall and the goals start to come too. He just looks like a hockey player, man. This kid looks like the real deal. And I do wonder, so the one thing that how does the production come, you know, and we've had this conversation in the past with Byfield, because listen, I'm not there. I love everything about LaFerriere's game right now. And I think the more you do this, goals are going to come. Same thing with Byfield. The more he plays this well, it's going to come. So I'm not exactly worried about it, but you can sense, because we saw it last year with Byfield. Yeah, he was playing well. Yeah, the analytics look good. Yeah, this looked good, but he didn't do anything production wise. He didn't have any points. He didn't have any goals. And that was becoming an issue. I'm certainly not there yet, but man, the kid looks good. He's getting some looks on the power play too. Really, really happy to see where his game's at here early on. Another player that's off to a hot start, Russ. We mentioned him earlier with best game of the season, or best game of his Kings career, according to McClellan. The first game is Quinton Byfield. I know we talked about him briefly, but anything you want to add to what we've already talked about with Byfield?
No, just keep up the play and the points will come. It was a little disappointing that they took away his assist on that Deneau goal. I don't know why they did that. It seems kind of strange. I tried to look at the replay. I didn't know if maybe they thought Hellebuck kind of got the puck up to – I don't know what happened there, but it certainly looked like they were involved, and both of them, he and Kaliev, were heavily involved in making that goal happen. So those are the type of plays that obviously doesn't show up on the score sheet as much as we want it to in terms of an assist, but heavily involved in the situation and led to a goal. So let's see more of that.
Trevor Moore off to a really good start, leads the team in goals with 3. I mean, obviously we're not surprised here. We've been talking about Trevor Moore. Trevor Moore. So I know we're saying hot starts, but how about the new guys? How about, you know, Jordan Spence is now gotten 2 games in. Englund has played 3 games. Trevor Lewis has played 3 games. So and I'm going to change the banner actually, Russ. So how about we switch it to that? Okay. How about the new guys? Because, you know, I think from a hot start standpoint, I think these are the main 3 guys, right? LaFerriere, Byfield, Trevor Moore off to good starts. I think that is the biggest 3 off the top of my head. And when I was looking at it earlier, I think those are the ones that make the most sense. How about the new guys though? Where are you at with some of the new guys? Let's talk about the new ones.
Well, I guess we could start with just that third pair with Englund and Spence, right? It feels like they're just doing what they're being asked to do. They're not playing outside the role. They know their role on this team. With Englund, he's not going to play probably more than 12 minutes a night. He's going to go out there, be physical, and maybe he got a little lucky that he didn't get a penalty on that Perfetti hit, because I was surprised. I thought they'd for sure call it, but I kind of like how they – I don't know if you'd watched it, but I like to watch games. We've talked about this too. I like to watch games on the away broadcast because you don't get that
home. I didn't last
as much
night,
as I love Jim Fox and Nick Nixon. Yep. I think they do a fantastic job. And Patrick O'Neill and Jared Stahl in the studio, they're great. Awesome. Jared Stahl's breakdowns are excellent. But I like to watch the away broadcast to kind of get a little bit less of that, I guess, a different objective or different point of view, really. And I was watching that hit, and they were kind of wondering, like, why there wasn't a call, but they also kind of explained that Perfetti kind of turned his back to Englund just as the hit was coming. So you got to protect yourself in that situation. So I thought they did a pretty good job of explaining that, but that's exactly what Englund's here to do, right? He's here to provide a little physicality, get in a fight or two, doesn't need to knock out the player like he did with Sandberg. That was kind of a tough look for him, mm-hmm. but the situation happened and the Kings got a power play out of it. So bring more of that, Andreas Englund. And with Jordan Spence, I mean, same thing. He just kind of knows his role. He's not going to play a lot of minutes, but he's going to bring an impact on that second power play unit. And I believe he has an assist in the first game he played. Was integral in some of the plays in the last game against Winnipeg, too. So I think we'll see Jordan Spence, once he gets a little bit more comfortable, too, gets a little bit more playing time, the season gets going a bit, I think we'll start to see that him make a little bit more, I guess, confident type small plays that we saw Jordan Spence make with the Ontario Reign. But that's how I feel with those two. And Trevor Lewis, I don't know. I haven't really seen like a lot to be like disappointed by Lewis. I know we've talked about the signing as maybe it seemed like unnecessary, but I'm sure there'll be situations where you need a player like Trevor Lewis. So I know we haven't got to it yet, and I haven't really noticed much of Trevor Lewis. I haven't really noticed him in bad situations, so I guess that's good as well. So I guess with the three new guys, it's been kind of what we expected.
Yeah, I would say that's fair. It's what we expected. For Englund, I don't think he, I don't know. I don't think he's been like particularly bad. My only issue is there seems to be like zero upside. I mean, nothing in terms of anything when it comes to moving the puck or offense. And I know it's not all about offense. I know that's where I approach the game from a more offensive point of view. So I trying to, you know, acknowledge that, but I'm still willing to wait this out a little bit with Englund and kind of see how it plays out a little bit. Cause again, I'm trying to get in how the Kings operate, right, and how their structure is and where he fits. So I'm trying to play the game there, but it's hard. You know, it seems like a very, very play this as safe as humanly possible. And I guess if that is the way they want to go, then that's the way they want to go. I watched a little bit of the Reign the other day. I didn't see the whole game, but you know, all it took was a few shifts. And I'm just sitting there thinking, someone's going to tell me what Englund does that Movarari doesn't. I guess punching guys in the face is really it, but I don't know. I'm missing something there. And Spence, I think he's like, don't go crazy at 5-on-5, play simple. I think he kind of has to because of who his partner is, frankly. You know, do your damage on the power play. The one thing I'll say though about that pairing, they really haven't played together. Like you look at the last game, I think at every game, I'm pretty sure this is accurate. In every game, they have spent more time with somebody else. Now, so I don't know if this is by design or if it is like we saw a decent, not a lot, but we saw some of Englund and Matt Roy together. And I think it was
a lot of special teams. I wonder if that has an impact.
Well, that's the thing. There's a lot of special teams. Roy was in the box a few times that one game. So I think that's probably right now there's been so many penalties in all of these games, 16 penalties in the game against.
You watched some of the games just across the National Hockey League. They're calling all over. That's kind of how it happens, right? At the beginning of the year, they're always calling
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. They're trying to
a lot of short-handed goals too.
Yeah. Yes. So I think that's probably part of. I want to see as the things settle if this pairing is somebody that they like. Okay, we do intend on playing them together much more often, but it's just the circumstances haven't allowed it. So we'll see. And yeah, Lewis. I mean, you're right. There hasn't been any. Again, talk about some. There's nothing there. You know, and I don't mean to be like flippant or disrespectful. It's not the intent. It's just I'm trying to be objective when looking at it, and it's just nothing there. I mean,
we're not going to put makeup on a pig here. I mean, let's call it what it is. So we haven't really seen much out of
right. There's yes, and I also want to acknowledge that the I think they would tell not they would tell you, but the organization would probably tell you the biggest thing that Lewis and Englund bring isn't even really on ice. It's a lot of you heard McClellan talk after I don't know if it was after the game or if it was in the media availability earlier today about Englund saying this probably says a lot about what McClellan thinks about him as on the ice. Is the first like four things he said were all off ice stuff, like great guy, great in the room, personality, guys love him, starting to get the system, starting to make some easy plays. It like took four things to get to the on ice stuff. So like reading between the lines, I think, you know, he's glue guy was said.
Took him a while to get to that elite playmaking capability. And
yeah, it took him a while to get to, he's starting to figure out the system on the ice. So, yeah, right. You know, and again, like, and that can take time, be patient. I'm willing to be patient with Englund. Like I'm again, like I said, it's not how I would do it, but I get it. It's how the Kings are doing. So I'm trying to play the game. But that's the thing. It's like, I don't think the Kings, in my opinion, not to beat a dead horse, but I just don't think that they're at the stage where they need to get these guys for off the ice reasons with the amount of veteran leadership that they do have on that team. That's just where I'm at. Russ, I did say that we were going to end on the individual players. I lied. One quick thing. Has any opinion that you had coming into the season, could be anything, could be about the goaltending, could be about the power play, could be about just anything at all related to this Kings team. You had an opinion or some opinions coming in. Anything changed three games? Anything making you second guess anything, rethink anything, think anything a little bit deeper? Anything changing for three games?
You know what's weird is when you brought up this topic, I try to think of like what's happened in these three games that nobody really expected to happen. I couldn't really think of anything, to be honest with you. It's kind of like a lot of what we expected of this Kings team has really shown its colors in these first three games. There's going to be games where the goaltending just doesn't show up, and they're going to have to try to win 6-5, 5-4. And we saw that for the first two games a little bit. And then all of a sudden, we might see Cam Talbot or Phoenix Copley step up to the plate, and they're still going to score. This is a team that's built to score. You look at up and down the lineup, especially with a little bit of chemistry that we're seeing with Kaliev, Deneau, and Moore, how Dubois, Fiala, and now Laferriere are starting to click a little bit. And then also with the Kopitar line. I mean, Anze Kopitar he's Anze Kopitar. He's just rinse and repeat, so right? Just this guy's going to be playing until he's like 42 years old. It's insane. But yeah, I mean, it's been kind of the same things we expected. I mean, Doughty and Anderson are even still looking pretty good. I mean, Doughty's actually looking really well. He's playing like prime Doughty again. So that's good to see. And then Gavrikov and Roy, just ho-hum. Same. I think last game I tweeted out, they outshot their opponents 10-1. It's like this team, this defensive pair is going to be insane. We talked about this before the show started, that it's kind of unfortunate because the sample size is way too small to kind of look at some numbers that we want to look at. But, man, I can't wait to maybe like 20, 25 games into the season to see what some of these underlying numbers are saying about like the pair of Gavrikov and Roy. And I swear, like, I'm going to beat the drum so hard to get Matt Roy on the U.S. Olympic roster, because I think like you kind of look at some of the right shot defensemen that they have on that team, and I would absolutely love to watch a defensive pair of Zach Werenski and Matt Roy play for the USA in the next World Cup or Olympics. I think that would be, or even Jacob Slavin, those two together. Oh, Matt Roy, just can I go in a little, like, I just have to have my Matt Roy moment. Yes. You know, my Matt Roy segment. It's just guy comes in and just plays 18 minutes of solid hockey. Doesn't have, like, when you put him in the power play, like we talked about, he's just like not really supposed to be there. But 5-on-5, one probably one of the best defenders at 5-on-5 in the NHL, and that's no understatement. It, I think it's going to be a big miss if this team doesn't try to re-sign him. I really do, and I don't know what they'll try to do with Jordan Spence or Brant Clark. Maybe you try to flip one of them to the left side. But man, if this team loses Matt Roy, I think that's going to be a huge loss for this team. But I'm just going to enjoy this season because I know he's here for the year. I don't want to trade it. I know Leib's going to say something to me on Twitter or chat about trying to trade Matt Roy for somebody, but that's not happening because he's a very integral piece to this team's success. And the pair of him and Gavrikov, they just lighting it up so far. So I'm excited to watch what they do for the whole season.
Except for when he's in the box. That was rare. That's not like
that him. Was rare. That was a rare. And then he almost took out Gavrikov's leg too. So that was a little disappointing, but hey, we got out of it unscathed. So
yeah,
that was okay.
Yeah,
that was a rare Matt Roy 3-penalty game. I wonder if he's ever done that.
Yeah, that was very rare. I would agree, Russ, and be honest with you, I can't think of anything that could or should or would really alter someone's opinion after three games. I think we should all. And it's easy because you have had months of without hockey. So that first game, win or loss, is probably going to be an overreaction. Same thing with these first like week or two of games. It just seems like there's such a spotlight when really you got to take a step back. I mean, anything that we talk about, anything that we tweet or I tweet shot contributions or expected goals, it's the sample's so small right now that it's still early. You're just trying to poke around for information. Who's kind of playing well early doesn't mean it's going to keep going. Like, I've been pretty hard on Trevor Lewis and Andreas Englund. Doesn't mean that they're not going to play better. It's early. So I kind of agree. And the reason I asked that question, Russ, was because I kind of expected you to have that answer that no, there's really nothing here to change my mind or my opinion on things. And the reason is, Russ, because it's been three games. That's why. It's because it's been a freaking week. So there's we really don't need to be, I don't think, going too crazy with opinions. I think, you know, you have to give this a solid like 15, 20 games, I think, before you can really start to sink your teeth into some things. I mean, I guess if you had a preconceived notion that the goaltending was going to be bad and then you'd see those first two games, well, it's the same as me. I have a preconceived notion that, admittedly, I'm not in love with Englund and Lewis and those signings. And, you know, so I can just as easily take these first couple of games and they haven't looked numbers-wise great, but I'm willing to see it out more. I mean, I just think it's so early in the season that we've got to, we've got to just wait a little bit, you know.
Sorry, go ahead.
That's just the way we kind of try to look at things analytically and the numbers wise is sometimes it's to a fault because you need to be able to react quickly, but I just don't think we're there yet.
I'm just wondering, like I see everybody obviously talk about like, oh, and we've talked about it too, and it's come across probably both of our minds is maybe this team kind of looks at acquiring a goaltender at the deadline and yeah, maybe it could happen, but I mean, I would think maybe this team kind of looks at getting another left shot defenseman again, because if you're able to shore up that left side with, I mean, I don't know how confident, and the only reason I say this because, and the reason we talk about Englund and why we're, I mean, I'm not so down on him. You don't sound too down on his play so far. It's kind of what we've all expected and they're not asking to do so much, but the reason why we talk about it is because he's really the only one that's they're willing to play. It's either him or Tobias Bjornfoot. And as much as everybody wants to talk about, hey, we need to keep Tobias Bjornfoot, they're not playing him. Mm-hmm. He's just sitting there. So I don't know what the team's plan is with Bjornfoot, especially in the future. Like if you think he's going to just be an integral part of this team where you're willing to just keep him on the roster. And I understand maybe there's a depth portion of this situation, but I mean, when I watched like a player like Jacob Morari play, I'm like, why isn't he getting that spot due to that Bjornfoot would get? Why wasn't he the one that stayed on the roster and Bjornfoot was waived? Because, I mean, if no one was going to claim Morari, no one was going to claim Bjornfoot. That was just – I feel like 99% sure about that. And if you're willing to sit Bjornfoot in the press box every game, why don't you just send him down and give him a bunch of minutes and try to figure it out down with the ring? Because now he's just – a guy who needs to figure out who he is on the ice, and he's not able to do that because he can't play. So I don't know. It's that's why I'm kind of wondering, like, if this team really had one legit third pair left defenseman, like, I don't even know who to bring up, but you just kind of trade. I mean, those pieces aren't really that expensive. You can find their dime a dozen in the league. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's something they look toward the deadline, but obviously further down the road, but it's kind of why I'm looking at the roster.
I would agree. I don't know that how likely it is that they're going to trade for a goaltender. But I agree. I think that there's, if you can find yourself a bottom pair left shot D that just is a little bit more capable, because like, I get it, the whole role and you just play it safe and this and that. But when you get to playoffs, you got to have somebody that you can rely on to actually play some minutes. And I just worry that you get to a point where you're playing like four defensemen, maybe five defensemen for like way too much of the game. And that is not sustainable. Like the way that Colorado game went was not sustainable. I mean, Englund hardly saw any shifts in Bjornfoot, and rightfully so. They didn't play well, but
you know, played 1 minute in the first period.
Yeah, like it's just, it is what it is, but it's that is not a sustainable way to go about business, you know.
And there's no one in the wings on that spot. That's those are the three players that the Kings have in that. Mm-hmm. If somebody goes down on the left side, let's God forbid, mm-hmm. it's either Bjornfoot or Jacob Marbury that steps in. And we're higher on Marbury than most. We're probably lower on Bjornfoot than most. But
I think we're higher on Marbury than the organization. I think we're lower on Bjornfoot than the organization. I think that seems to be pretty fair. Clear.
that's definitely fair.
That seems
I think there's definitely a depth part to the left shot defenseman that's maybe missing that they could shore up, but I think for the time being, I'm totally fine with giving Englund or whether it be Bjornfoot, whoever that spot start on the left side or that start on the left side until we get to the important games, maybe in March or April.
I'm at the point where I wouldn't be opposed to see, unless I think I've been as hard on Bjornfoot as anybody, but I wouldn't hate seeing Bjornfoot play with Spence, somebody that can just be a little bit more from a skating standpoint, a little bit more from a puck movement standpoint. I'm open to it. You know, I'm open to, like I said, I made peace, you know, that ain't gonna be Moverari or Clark. We got what we got with Englund and Bjornfoot. So let's see what fits. We've seen a couple games now with Englund and Spence. I'm open to seeing some Bjornfoot Spence. If he's on the roster, let's get him in and try it for a game or two. I genuinely don't know how much worse it can be. So I'm open to it. Something else that I'm open to is as we get set to close the show here, for those of you that have listened and if you enjoyed the show, we would appreciate it if you gave us a like and gave us a if you're not a subscriber, hop in and subscribe. You know, Russ and I, we try to come at this from a more numbers and analytical point of view. This is how we try to do it, for right, better, for worse, whatever it is. That's just the way we like to do it. There's 48 people that are viewing this at the moment, and there's 16 likes. Russ, that's 33%. We got to be getting up to at least over 50%. So if you could hit the like button, go tap it, smash it, whatever you want to do. It goes a long way for us. We appreciate it if you enjoy the content. I know we really do appreciate everybody that's in here. The comments, mm-hmm. as usual, have been buzzing. Holden, we agree. I don't know what they don't like about Moverari. Maybe I don't know what it is. Maybe they don't like the tuna nickname. I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, you know what? Arby comes in here. Reviews on Apple or Spotify helps the podcast too. Appreciate that, Arby. Absolutely. Drop us a review. Drop that. Absolutely. Would you be more willing to see Bjornfoot, just given, like, you know, for the Kings to finally say, okay, can we see what we got here and just give Bjornfoot like an extended, like, you know what Englund is, right? Like, I don't think there's any secret here what Englund is.
I think Dylan Sandberg knows what Englund is too.
So like, I just wonder if there's a point where they're like, let's give Bjornfoot a week, give him a stretch of game here. Is there something here or is there not, you know, because if say something does happen and they got to spot somebody in, they got to know, can we play Bjornfoot or do we have to bring up somebody or, you know, or do something else? Because I don't know. I'd be curious. I don't know what your thought is. I know if you lean more toward you know, stick with Englund. He's kind of a safer. Or, hey, let's see if Bjornfoot can hack it.
Well, I mean, how much worse can you get from with Andreas Englund? I mean, like, he hasn't been great. He hasn't been bad. It is what it is. He's just kind of out there playing physical. Yeah, sure. But, I mean, with Bjornfoot, I don't think you can get – I think it's kind of that same kind of level, right? We haven't seen – I mean, we've seen flashes of Bjornfoot. That's the thing that's kind of disappointing here is – I mean, I just constantly think about that goal he scored in Ontario. Like, why can't I see that every game? Where is that Tobias Bjornfoot? What happened? So, I don't know. Maybe I'm totally fine with giving Bjornfoot a little bit longer look. He's played with Jordan Spence, obviously, with the Rain for a – Yeah. quite a while, actually. So they have some chemistry there. So, I mean, I don't think it can go get any worse. And if it does, then it'll make us look a little bit better. Maybe we were right. So I don't know. Who knows? But I don't know. It's just see what you got out of Bjornfoot. Like, we're all waiting to see what the team or the organization is seeing in this player. Why don't you actually put it to the test and put it on the ice and try to get an evaluation of him? Because right now we don't know. I don't even know if Bjornfoot's going to be on the team next year. Who knows? So,
to end on a real positive, the bottom three, and guys, I know it's small samples here, especially the Bjornfoot who's played one game. The bottom three in on-ice Corsi percentage is Tobias Bjornfoot, Andreas Englund, and Trevor Lewis. The bottom three in expected goals is Tobias Bjornfoot, Trevor Lewis, and Andreas Englund. So, to your point, I don't know how much better it's going to get, but at least – Maybe the combo with Spence works out a little bit better. Maybe they complement each other a little bit better. I don't know.
Who are the top three in expected goals? Do you have that up?
Give me 2 seconds. I can get that. Absolutely. The top three in expected goals on ice for the LA Kings this season. boy, I'm sorry. I must have misspoke here. I don't know what I was saying. Maybe I didn't mean that Philippe Deneau was having a slow start. Maybe it was like an under-the-radar start is what I meant to say.
Yeah, okay.
He clearly doesn't have a slow start. He leads the team, Russ, as a matter of fact, in expected goal percentage. Trevor Moore, his line mate, is second. And Carl Grundstrom is third. Randon is going to love – he loves Grundstrom, big Tonka guy. So there's your top three expected goals.
I feel like I have to give – props to Grundstrom because I probably was really low on him and I was probably lower on him the most at the beginning of the year. And I mean, he's just played so well to start the year. And I talked about him earlier, but I mean, some of the like when the team kind of is like just not looking like they're providing a lot of energy in the game, it's just kind of out there skating the 30 or 45 seconds. I mean, when Carlo Grundstrom hits the ice, you can see it, you can hear it. I mean, and that play he made to Anze Kopitar to tie the game. I mean, you talked about it too. I mean,
oh, good job on the video break, the video. I'm glad you did that too, because that really did show when he gets that puck, that's what we talk about when the play slowing down for guys. Because how many times have you seen that puck pop out to a guy and whack it? It just whacks it into the goalie's pads.
Yep.
Not Grundstrom. He held it, gave a little bit of a hesitation, makes a real nice play over to Kopitar. Yeah, that was a great look there that you gave. And so like this is why we need Randon, because we're at an hour and 20 minutes Russell and I can go for hours if we're just doing this. So we need somebody to brain us in. But one last thing, I promise. Like with Carl Grundstrom, you mentioned when the team needs a spark, the team needs an energy, you can go and play physical. When we talk about like, when people are talking about Trevor Lewis, like Grundstrom isn't like a perfect player or anything like that, but he can play that physical style, get in on a forecheck. He can shoot the puck. He can finish. And he was providing that for a lot of it from the fourth line. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it so great. When you had a Lizotte, Grundstrom, and like, if there's somebody else on that fourth line that's capable, boy, oh boy, you've got yourself again, a mismatch on the fourth line, a legitimate fourth line. And that is my concern, is there's somebody that's kind of acting as a little bit of an anchor on that fourth line. Because if you look at the statistics through these couple of games, small sample, Grundstrom and Lizotte are way better away from Trevor Lewis right now. Hopefully that changes. Hopefully it changes.
That'll be a line to watch to the first part of the season. Because it seems like the top nine is kind of there for the time being. I would like to see a long run of how that line. I mean, I guess the lineup as a whole, right? I mean, it seems like it's pretty set. whether it be barring switch injury, on England and Bjornfoot, but everything looks pretty good.
Yeah, like Laferriere, I think he's really settled in there, and Kaliev is obviously going to get a look there with Deneau and Moore with the Arvidsson injury. So, like, there's clear opportunity here for Grundstrom, Lazat, and somebody on that fourth line. And you know, Lewis is there, so there's the chance for him to go and do it. But, you know, at some point, it's got to start to do a little bit of something with his line mates, because it just hasn't happened as of yet. So, Russ, I think that will finally wrap us up for this one. Finally wrap us up. Really appreciate everybody in the chats. It's been great. Randon is scheduled to be back next week, thank God, because he will get this ship back on track rather than whatever track I had us going down.
Excellent.
I appreciate you guys in the chat again. Appreciate you, Russ, for doing the duo with me for these last few weeks. We are scrolling across the bottom on the Twitter. We are at @hockey_royalty, at @RandoCommando24, at NHL Russell, at JW Paterino. And as we say, don't forget about Kyle Garcia at Kopitar4HOF. Kyle's doing a great job. Rain or off and running too. That season has started. So, hey, don't forget about them, because there's a really good chance that the Kings are going to have to see some of those players in Ontario up this season. So make sure you're following Kyle Garcia. We'll get him on the show here at some point to give us an update on how things are going down on the farm. So with that, everybody, again, thank you. It's been great. Well done in the chat. It was buzzing again as usual. And like we say, hey, we're heading off to Minnesota. Go Kings, go.